at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I get a phone call and it's Ian. I'm like, oh yes, my favorite client, Ian. How are you, mate? And he was like, Mike, I've got bad news, man. Unfortunately, we're gonna have to finish the engagement with you guys. Ooh. And at the time, that was 60% of our revenue.
Ooh.
And so I started walking home, and then it started pouring down with rain.
Oh, you and can't I didn't write this stuff, huh?
I know. And I was like, you know what? And then I remember thinking to myself at that moment, it was kind of a liberating experience. Because I remember thinking, I'm like, if this is as bad as it's going to get, like, fucking let it rain.
No one's ever lucky. I think the only lucky you get in life is where you're born, and then you make the rest.
Stick around. It's going to be a good ride.
Yeah. I can see you over there with the plant, mate.
You're camouflaged.
When did this pop up? This was here last time.
No, I opened the window, a bit of natural,
got natural light.
Yeah.
Is this another podcast that's joined us? Or come on, boys.
It's your replacement, mate.
Eddie, how does the guest get around
We
now?
Thought it'd be more interesting.
How does the guest get around here? The long way. Yeah, making them work hard. Yeah. Jeez. Come on, boys.
All right, guys, let's get straight into the guest. He's an entrepreneur at heart, CEO of Australia's largest online marketplace for new property. He was an early investor in Australia's number one nano gifting business, two-time Deloitte Tech Fast 50.
Back to back.
Bang, bang. He's voted Australia's coolest employer.
Oh, I like that one.
You guys didn't make that shortlist?
No, we didn't.
He's passionate about affecting positive change in the world while still kicking ass at business. He's on the board of the innovative charity Igniting Change, helping grassroots community organisation. And to put it simply, this guy's an absolute winner. We're honoured to have him here. Give it up for Urban CEO Michael Bird.
Yeah.
Welcome.
All right, how are you, man?
What's up, man?
Hey, buddy.
Mate, excited.
Welcome to the pod.
Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah, appreciate it.
Sorry about the intro. No, it was a good intro, actually, Pete. Sorry, that was good.
He nailed it, man. What are you talking about?
He did nail it.
Thought I was all right.
Down the barrel.
The people won't say the 40 other takes we did.
Righto. Let's go.
Oh, awesome, man. Thanks for coming in. As we're doing the groundwork on yourself, you've done a lot at the ripe old age of 32. but we wanted to start on Urban. Talk to us about Secret Garden, like where it started. And I know we're having a bit of chat off air about the things that drove you to push on and push forward. And
I'm not sure if it was Social Garden, not Secret Garden.
Yeah.
No, it's absolutely no stress. We've done heaps of this video stuff and it's never
Secret Garden. Time. I've just been there a few times.
That sounds like it's a good job. What are you wearing, a corset at Secret Garden there, PK?
some good times there.
Someone's walking him around.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know. I reckon if you look up Secret Garden, who knows what's coming.
Were you wearing a colour shirt or just the grey again?
So cool, man. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, man.
Really, really appreciate it. Man, you've done a lot to this point. We struggled to sort of nail it all down. But for us, we really want to talk about Social Garden, where it started, off to Urban, the challenges you've had through that time. And I guess the reasons why you pivoted and wanted to do other things. We find that super, super interesting, man.
Yeah, man. It's been a journey, and it feels like I've been doing it for a long time, and it's been very slow. But then you kind of zoom out and stuff does kind of, some things happen quicker than you think, but
that's wild. You think it's slow at 32 and to have achieved what you've achieved. Well, far out. Yeah.
My business partner and I, we work a lot.
Yep.
And so it's kind of like, if you can stack 60 or 70 hours in a week every week for 15 years, it kind of, you start getting the extrapolated effect of that over time. But certainly if you had a little camera and the discussions that we have, it's like, how do we fucking get it to go faster?
It's definitely
more that vibe than we're like, wow, look how fast it's going.
Well, it sounds like that's what you've done. Sounds like those meetings.
Yeah, those conversations have led to some good moves. Yeah,
because your Social Garden and then onto Urban. You mentioned earlier that you were doing some things there, and you're like, I want to do something else. I want to put fuel on the fire.
Yeah. So how did that transition go? Because you were saying you were, I remember, the Social Garden. He's got me nervous now. But at Social Garden, obviously that, you know, so that for the people at home that don't know, that's a like a digital agency focusing in the property space and education.
Yeah, with property development. So we work with most of the, like a lot of the listed property developers like Mervec and Frasers and
The big boys.
And then on the education side, we kind of help a lot of the universities in Australia recruit students from both overseas and domestically as well.
Yeah, right. And what was the change there that took you on this crazy, because you know that social garden's certainly interesting, but this urban rocket ship that you're on, that's the one I think that we really want to bunker into and understand, you know, that journey and particularly like the acquisition and how you've bootstrapped it from I think 0 to 100 employees. Yeah, we're super interested to understand. You're saying you feel like you're moving slow, but for us, we're sitting on the sidelines going, oh my God, how much is this guy doing and how quick is he moving? And some of those moves directly throw fuel on that fire, right? So the acquisition being an example sort of thing.
Yeah, I think, we think a lot about what is the future of property going to look like and the future of education and the future. I'd say we're just generally interested in what the future kind of looks like and how things are changing. And kind of when I was at university with one of my other co-founders from Social Garden, his name's Andrew, we had a music events business where we would tour bands and DJs and things around the university towns, which by the way as like a 19-year-old was the greatest job.
It was the greatest.
And it was going okay for the first few, and we were doing kind of like pub crawls and stuff like that, and then Facebook kind of launched in New Zealand. And one of the things that we were kind of, oh, this is kind of interesting. It's kind of this new thing. Everyone's on it. And everyone's, oh my God, are you on Facebook kind of thing? Which seems so weird now because it's like everyone's fucking on Facebook or Instagram or whatever it is, you know. But at the time, it was kind of a pretty new thing. And we had a friend that gave us this like little snippet of code that we could enter into the address bar and automatically invite everybody that a person was friends with automatically to an event.
Oh, you hacked the book. Wow.
They hacked the book early.
Love
sorry,
it.
Sorry, Mark. Yeah. But we, I don't know. But we kind of were doing that and we were able to invite, you know, tens, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people to these kind of like low-key club nights. And then that really worked effectively and we were off to the races kind of thing. And after we kind of had that business and we were kind of tired and hungover from 2 years of doing this.
We can't live this life forever.
Yeah, pretty much. And then it was because it was like it would rain one day and then the whole thing would be a complete disaster and it would be good weather and it would be like a home run kind of thing. And so after that experience, I moved to Wellington, had another startup, lost everything I had at that time. It was kind of like an online marketplace that connected graphic designers with
Like 99 Designs.
Exactly like 99 Designs.
And that's Australian as well, right?
Yeah, so that we launched at exactly the same time.
Yeah, because I was using them early. We were talking about one of my earlier businesses.
Yeah.
And, branding, all of that back, way back, you know, early 2000s was, using sites like that for sure.
Yeah, and exactly. And it was, I learned a lot through the experience, lost everything that I had from the previous one. And when I moved from Australia with a bag of clothes and about a couple of $100 and I was living on my mate's couch in Brunswick East for like a solid 3 months while I was trying to work out what I was going to do next, and he was so kind. Cheers, John, appreciate you, brother.
Shout out Johnny boy.
Yeah, appreciate it. The place is called The Lodge and there was about 20 of us Kiwis all living there together. Yeah. So my friend Andrew came over and my current business partner George came over. And I was talking to them one night, explaining kind of what happened with the UPIC business is what it was called. It was similar to 99 Designs. And it was kind of like, you know, the thing we got right about them, I don't think we were that good at running music businesses, but the whole social media thing was like, it seemed very obvious at that point that it was going to become massive. Yeah. And so we just went back and thought, you know, let's just kind of go back to the thing that we know works. And we kind of didn't really have that much of a plan. We didn't know we were going to work in property, for example. We had no idea that, you know, that was going to be the path, but let's just focus on something that we think is probably true, that social media is going to be big and it's probably overlooked generally. because it was kind of just like young people at that point were using it. And so we started there and kind of, and then we kind of just worked it out as we kind of went and we got new information and we kind of just would follow the kind of, follow the flow, you know?
I love that. So yeah. Like it would have been a dint to the ego, obviously young, had a business and then it just went under. What gave you the confidence then, I guess, to go again?
You know, I've been asked that before and it was never even, I don't know, it was just naivety probably. It never even occurred to me that I wouldn't do it again.
Really? And so did you, it didn't even bother you?
And you knew you were not going to work for someone? Like you always knew that you were going to run your own, you were just an entrepreneur at heart?
I guess so. I kind of like most of when I was growing up, I thought I was going to be a teacher actually. And because I like working with people and I love sharing the experience of learning things with people. And kind of, yeah, it was between that or I wanted to be, I was like too short and slow to be a great basketball player, but I really loved basketball and I was like, maybe I could be a coach or whatever. And cause I love the idea of putting the teams together and kind of working with people and learning new things together. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, ended up being that. It's also like that.
Well, you've kind of done that on. Well, you've kind of done that on steroids, right?
Yeah,
you've done. You know, you've, which we're, I'm sure we're going to hear about as we keep moving forward. But that's what you've.
Sorry, Benny.
No, you go, man.
I love the fact that when it all boiled down and the onion was peeled right back, and you had your swag, you're living with your 20 other people in Brunswick East, you went, all right, what are we good at?
Yeah,
what are we good at?
Yeah,
and because we have those moments. We go, well, what's worked? Like, let's break it down and go, well, what's worked? Let's double down on that.
Yeah, and sometimes it's obvious, but unless you stop in time and actually consciously think about it, it just passes by in the subconscious sort of thing, doesn't it? So you got to...
Yeah, so the fact that you're able, all right, well, that works. Let's put all our effort into
that. At that age as well.
And then that's where Social Garden...
Yeah, so we started Social Garden. We were like, okay, cool. Let's kind of... And I was like, I'm going to go back to the partner that I knew I worked well with in the past, which was Archie. And then we started... and then we had George who could design websites and code and do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And we kind of partnered up with him and the three of us kind of got started.
Yeah, nice. So you picked your team. You picked your path of what was going to work. And sort of here you are.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I think someone told me this one day and it's so on point, which is kind of like the business stuff is a lot like driving in the dark where you're never going to have the full view of like where you're trying to go and trying to focus on, okay, but what about if this happens or this or this or this? And you kind of, people get so caught up in terms of,
trying to map it right out.
But when we get to 5,000 employees, we'll have this problem. It's like, fuck, if you can get to 5,000 employees, you're going to have a lot of resources to solve that problem. Yeah, yeah. And I think kind of the paralysis that people feel in relation to kind of just not, it kind of stop makes them not start. Or what they do, what I've seen happen is that they put a toe in the water, but it's the first sign that things aren't working. They're like, oh, it's because the idea is shit and blah, 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 and all this stuff's going to happen. And so they do something else and they end up just kind of jumping from thing to thing to thing to thing, never kind of really committing. And I think, you know, elements of that is correct in the sense that if it's kind of not working and it's really not working and you've been doing it for a long time and you've been doing the work, and we all know if you've been doing the work or not. And it's not working, then maybe it's, you know, to look for something else. But, you know, you've got to open enough doors to really be sure.
And I heard a saying back in the day that most people, and I've latched onto this over the years, but most people tend to give up when something good's about to happen, right? So just you work for, like you said, you do all that work, and then just as it's about to happen and you might, you know, you start to lose interest or motivation or passion or whatever it is, and you stop, and if you had just gone that little bit further, things might have been a little bit different.
It's definitely the case. I mean, like we've kind of, you know, we've got our different businesses, and I don't think there's ever been a time when all of them have been firing at the same time, ever. And it's like there's always something to kind of be gutted about or disappointed about. There's always something to be excited about. And I think a lot of the stuff, particularly for people that are kind of getting into business for the first time or, you know, a relatively earlier stage, I think it's just getting comfortable with the feeling of there's always going to be some shit that's bad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And just being okay with it and being like, you know what? There's some bad stuff. There's some good stuff. And it's kind of when the good stuff happens, not being like, it's all because I'm like, I've done all this great stuff and finally the world realizes how good I am. Because eventually that stuff's not going to work anymore because it doesn't work for long. And then you've got to have some other crisis. And in the same respect, when you kind of hit that crisis period, getting too down on yourself and beating yourself up and like getting into this kind of negative talk with your own self is just, you know, both things are bad. So it's about trying to find the balance between being like pleased when things are going well, but not being too emotionally connected to the outcome. And when things aren't going badly, just focusing on kind of what's next, what do we know works? Let's go back to that and just focus on that.
It's so true. I suffer from self imposter syndrome big time. Always self-doubt myself. And then my partner or my business partner, my wife, she's always, no, you got to see the positive side of things and keep going. And I'm always the one looking, but what if this, what if that? And I've learned over time that if that happens, oh, well, we'll find a way to solve that and move on.
And, yeah. and you're worrying about things out of your control, right?
Exactly.
So you're putting energy into things that you can't control. So you just lower your eyes and you focus, like you said, peel it back to what you trust or what you know and what you can control.
And keep backing yourself in as well. Like you say, if you're on the right path and, yeah, it'll get there.
Totally. I mean, our education business is probably the most recent example where we kind of had like a tough period during COVID. And, you know, we've got a new person, her name's Rosie, and she's running that business for us. And she's absolute gun. And we kind of promoted her into the role maybe like 9 months ago or so. And it was kind of in the midst of COVID when things were like particularly difficult. And, you know, things out of sales are slowing down a little bit. And we were kind of like, we call it like we're eating a bit of shit kind of thing for a while. And so we were just like going back to the things when we looked back and we thought, you know, when social garden property was going well, when urban was going well, or when the education business was going well, what were the things that we were doing then?
Yeah.
And then just kind of stepping back, focusing on those things, going back to the stuff that we know works, and then doing the press ups and just doing the work.
Yep.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's awesome. And that's a lesson, is taking that bit of time and reflecting on what has worked. And then, like we're saying, doubling down on that.
I called her the other, like last week, and I was like, hey, because we had like an unbelievable, we've been on a really good run with the education stuff with her leading it. And I called her and I was like, Rosie, I was like, this is great. And kind of said to someone, I was like, you know, enjoy the moment when it's going well, but know that it's not going to be like it's not this easy, and it's going to go back to being hard. But I want you to remember, what were the things that we've been doing for the last 8 weeks that led us to the position now where it's going really well? And remember those things and write them down, because at some point soon it's not going to be happening, and you're going to go back to that list, you're going to read through it,
and you'll know what you need to do.
And so she's done that, and it's kind of, you know, that time will come, but hopefully not too soon.
Yeah, and that's I'm listening to that thinking that's fantastic leadership, Mike, you know, and she's probably not the only one you do that stuff with. Like, you've got a big team under yourself, you know. Are there things that you like to, I guess, wake up of a morning, come in the day and go, how can I make people feel good about what they're doing? How can we celebrate certain things, but how can I pull people up out of the shit as well?
Yeah.
You know, when it's going poorly.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've been doing more, like, we've got, I would say maybe like, 5 or 6 like business leaders, I guess, that we kind of work with from our stuff that's kind of our core businesses or stuff that we're invested in or whatever. And that's kind of the joy. I get so much joy out of that process of like working with them, helping them to kind of
giving them opportunities,
finding confidence in themselves. Because I think a lot of the time people just, you know, a lot of people just have not been told, it's like, you can fucking do this shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Believe in yourself.
And a lot of people just look after themselves, right? Especially people as they push up, like you put in your position, Mike, where, you know, you could, I guess, ostracize yourself from the team and just let them all go about and all the people that you've appointed to go and do it. But sounds like you're out on the front line, boots on the ground, trying to empower them and teach them the lessons that you've got over the journey, which is cool.
Yeah. We kind of track this, George and I think we've had 5 or 6 different people that have worked at Social Garden and are now in CEO roles.
Wow.
And like, we love that.
From it's the like, ground up, bottom
yeah.
up.
From yeah. the bottom yeah, up. Yeah. And, you know, and then, you know, we're proud of that and we're proud of them, and we're like, stay close to them. And
part of the success, I would suggest. Now, Mick, can you sort of bridge the gap, mate? So how you got into the property, how you said at the start that wasn't the plan. You just ended up going down that way with Social Garden, and then how you transitioned from the property and Social Garden to now, you know, founder and CEO of, you know, the largest online marketplace for new property in Australia.
Yeah, I'll start with the Social Garden stuff, because I think it's quite, it's an interesting way to kind of think about how to get to product market fit, because I think that's the real challenge, right? It's like, there's a myriad of different businesses you can launch. You could do anything, right? So it's like, what should you do? And then I think it starts with, what's a theme that you think you appreciate that is more true than what most people realize? And my business partner, Andrew, who I mentioned before that had the music stuff with, he's also a shareholder and on our board now. He, when he left, he kind of went back. I remember, I'll never forget when he called me and he said, you know, we kind of parted ways from him being an executive in the company. And he was like, you know, Mike, he's like, the thing, it was social media. And he's like, the next thing is clean energy. And he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do in the clean energy space, but it's going to be something and it's going to be big. And I was like, and I believed him when he said that to me. And so then they went on and have since raised hundreds of millions of dollars from of debt to provide kind of funding to put solar panels on top of retail and like shopping centers and stuff like that, and schools and airports and all sorts of things like that, from like a big clean energy. And that now that like that business is called Solar Bay, it's like smashing it. But it's kind of that kind of same idea of like, what's something that I think is I'm kind of naturally got some kind of advantage in, or I think to be true probably more than the average person, and then starting there. And so when we started with the social stuff, we kind of were, when we moved out of living on this person's, at my friend's couch, and we got this apartment in the CBD, and we got the apartment there because we thought that you know, we could probably get a job that would be close to where the apartment was if it was in the city. And so we got this job, the first job when we kind of first started Social Garden. Both Andrew and I, George was already kind of running like, I guess, the very first iteration of Social Garden that was more like in the web space. It was called Cat House. And he was kind of up and running on that stuff. But Andrew and I, we basically went and sold software for the same company together. And we were living together at the same time as well. And the place we got the job at, a key part of the reason we got the job is because it's 150 meters away from out where we lived.
So it worked.
Yeah, and so it worked. And so what we would do is we would wait to our lunch break. Literally, the second the clock went across to the lunch break, we were in the like poorest fitting, cheapest suits you've ever seen in your life. We would go down the elevator. We would run up the road as excited as you can imagine. And we had a phone that was in his bedroom, which is our makeshift office. And then we would get the phone book out and we would just go call for call. And sit across from each other and go, you go, now I go, now you go, now I go. And we would do it for an hour, and we did it every day for, and what we were calling and asking to do was like, you know, this new thing, Facebook, you know, you've got to be on Facebook, you've got to be on social media, you guys should, we can manage your kind of, we can create content and post stuff on your Facebook. This is when kind of likes and all that kind of stuff was a thing. And that's kind of where we started. And so we would go, but then what would happen is when we kind of got started, we would go see the client, when we'd pull like the occasional sickie to go see the customer. and they would be like, you know, where's the ROI kind of thing? Where's the value kind of coming from? And we were kind of not that clear on that, but we knew that we would see that they would get this huge reach and all these people would see it. And one of the customers was a property client, was like a development in Windervale, I think it was. And he said to us, oh, you know, what would be good is if you guys could get leads. And we're like, leads. We're like, what's the lead? And he's like, oh, it's like, it's this thing. It's like basically giving me some information. I can actually call someone and sell them some property.
So that guy was the turning, like he was the thing. You guys create, I love when you create, because our journey, we were talking earlier, so similar, man. I had one of my first businesses, Stomp Marketing, because the same thing, I discovered this social media stuff and the websites, but it was a hard sell, man, trying to convince people there was value there when it was early on. But it sounds like that was a pivotal moment, right?
Like bulb moment sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was because we weren't really sure how we were going to get the leads, because we're like, oh, yeah, like, fuck, it would be good if we could get leads.
Because the tools on the platform weren't even advanced back then either, were they?
Nah, this is like 2012, I guess, 2000. Yeah, it would have been 2012. Yeah. And so it was pretty early doors. But at the same time that we had Social Garden, I also on the side launched buyabitcoin.com.
Oh, shit. please tell me early you bought days. A Bitcoin.
But all it was essentially, it was like the most stripped back version of like a crypto marketplace that you could possibly imagine.
Like CoinSpot started like that, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so all it was a form that people could kind of download an information pack about Bitcoin, and that's kind of how we got started, and we started getting leads. And so we saw the kind of, the fact that, you know, this idea, and like we were reading white papers about different crypto related stuff at the time, and you would enter your contact details in to get download the white paper about probably like early day door kind of Ethereum or whatever it was. And then we would enter the details and obviously create a lead that way. Yeah. And so we thought, well, what about if we took the idea from the crypto stuff, which is to exchanging value for someone to give you their contact details, then maybe we could create a one-page website, which is everyone's like knows the landing page now. We can make it a one-page website where the only thing that you can do is download this information pack about this property development, and we'll get the person to give us their contact details. And that's pretty much how the whole thing started.
Spot on, man. That's awesome. Because I went on that exact same journey, dude.
Yeah.
And I obviously knocked it out the park, relatively speaking. But man, yeah, that's cool because back then it was, because it was so early back then, you know, like it was a hard slog. And like you said, imagine if you held on to buybitcoin.com today, would that be?
Yeah, I sold the company actually like shortly after, only for a very small amount of money, but it was to bitcoin.com.au. So we were like sharing an office with this like crypto company that's now listed called Banxa, which is like a payments gateway kind of thing to trade. So when people want to buy crypto, they kind of go through their kind of payments infrastructure or whatever, and they're able to convert like fiat currency into cryptocurrency. But it sounds like it's, and again, when you kind of compress this stuff down, it sounds like it's like, oh, then we did this, then we did that. Yeah. Yeah. Like it all happened in a week. I can promise you, it was a very long way from that. In fact, I remember the first week that I kind of was working full time in Social Garden, this is like right at the start. And my office was in the big red X building. I don't know if you know the one on Church Street in Richmond. It's across the road from where REA, realestate.com.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were in there, and I remember we had this client, and it was one of our first customers, and he was this dude that was actually, his office was next door. His shop, which was like a supplement shop, was next door to the office we were working in. So it was like the dream result because we could go see the client, close the deal, and then kind of work with them as well. And he called me, and his name is Ian, and from Evelyn Fay, and he is the biggest legend. And if I had to put it down to any one customer that pretty much got us to get started, I would hand on
heart.
He's the guy, Ian, and he's the man. And anyhow, so it gives me goosebumps thinking about it because it was so like, it was such a moment.
Someone back saw what you were doing, gave you an opportunity, and then you guys were smart enough to just go and take the opportunity.
That's it. And so anyway, so Ian calls me up on the kind of Monday, and we'd had like, you know, we were 22 or whatever at the time, we'd had like this wild party in the weekend, and I was like a little bit like still hungover on Monday, and like went to work, but I was like so excited because I was like, yes, finally, like I can do it again, and we're back baby. And so went to the office in the big red X building, and at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon I get a phone call, and it's Ian. I'm like, oh yes, my favorite client, Ian. How are you, mate? And he was like, Mike, I've got bad news, man. Unfortunately, we're gonna have to finish the engagement with you guys. Ooh. And at the time, that was 60% of our revenue.
Ooh. Well, that hurts.
It was bad. And it was, I remember thinking to myself, I've kind of let down my friend, and I've like let myself down, and I was like so disappointed. And I remember walking to the East Richmond train station from up the road, and just like feeling like the biggest loser of all time, and going to the Mikey thing and pulling out my wallet. And then going to play the thing. And for people that are in Melbourne, you might recognize the sound of bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
And so it was essentially, I was like, oh no. I was like, oh, thank God. I just get my card out. Tried to put $4 on the account, declined as well. And I remember being like, fuck, I've like lost our biggest customer. I can't even get a bus ride, train ride home. I can't top up my mic. This sucks. And so I started walking home, and then it started pouring down with rain.
Oh, you can't write this stuff, huh?
I know. And I was like, you know what? And then I remember thinking to myself at that moment, it was kind of a liberating experience. Because I remember thinking, I'm like, if this is as bad as it's going to get, like fucking let it rain and just like let it go, and just letting it kind of go and just trying to move forward and stay focused. And the next day we got the client back. And everything kind of continued from there. But we all have these kind of low moments in our lives, whether it's in business or in your personal life or whatever. And I think it's just sometimes letting go of the things that you can't control. And I think in that moment, it was like when it was raining, I'm like, I can't fucking stop it raining. It's like, it's going to rain, you know.
And it builds resilience, right?
Yeah. And to recognize it that early too in your life. At
22, man, that's super impressive.
Wow.
Yeah. That's, to not let it beat you down. And I guess, yeah, you couldn't control the client leaving. You couldn't control the weather either.
Yeah.
So it was a nice just reminder that, like, let's focus on the things we can focus on. And that's what it sounds like you did. And so what did you say? You got the client back the next day?
We got the client back the very next day. And I, like, told my friend when I got – because I was so like, nervous about telling him because I felt like I'd let him down.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, it's all good, man. It's all good. Like, hug it out. It's all good. We're going to be sweet. Mm. Like, fucking who cares? I'm going to stay. I'll just stay here longer until we're all good. And then the next day we got the client back, and then we got another client, and then we kind of worked out the property thing, and then we kind of were able to apply the same idea to the education market. And then that year we kind of jumped from like a 50 grand revenue to like 2 million, then 6 million, and then it just went
all from that rainy
night. And you were doing the education back then, 2012.
Yeah. So that was when the whole RTO kind of situation was going down. And all the kind of universities were facing disruption and all the stuff. So everyone was kind of working out that leads were pretty important for businesses and the education and property markets. And we kind of went from there.
Were you ready for that jump though, from going 50 grand a year to 2 mil? Is it?
Yeah, I guess so. It was kind of like, I don't know. I'm just trying to think. What was really important is having like good early staff.
Yeah.
And we had the best people, you know, and one of them, her name's Christine.
Don't get sick of hearing it.
Don't get sick of hearing that because it's spot on. It's the one. Yeah. Hard work, good people.
Yeah, exactly, man. And we had this, like, you know, we had these people that one of my friends from back home where I grew up, he moved to Australia at the same time and he came on. And then we had Andrew, the dude that I was living with at the time. His cousin came on board as well. His name was, and those two actually went off and launched what ended up being a really successful company in New Zealand. Later, they were one of the ones that were the CEOs. And then we had this young girl who, like, when she started, her name's Christine, and when she started as an intern writing for us, like just writing content, and she was like so nervous, she could barely like look us in the eyes at the beginning of the meeting.
Mm.
And she stayed with us for 6 years. And then she went and worked at Adore Beauty for a year or 2 years, and now she's just joined us back at Urban again.
Yeah, nice.
And so it's just kind of when they do the full circle and come back, it's like, you know, it gets the feels.
Spot on. Nah, you going?
Yeah, no, I'm going. No, that's awesome because we hear it in here a lot. People, we've got our businesses, people. I guess what I'm thinking about is like, so circa how many people do you reckon?
About 100
across the businesses,
across like Snap Listings, which is in the US. We've got a business partner in that, we're kind of like partners with her, and then Urban, Social Garden and Student Garden, which is we've since spun out our education business.
That's the educational one. Yep.
But yes, so those ones combined is about 100.
So do you, you know, is that heavy, or do you think plugging in the right people, like, you know, you said earlier, you got a lot more people, but you got a lot more resource. You got a bigger army to help you. You know, does that make it lighter or heavier with that sort of numbers?
It's a lot of it's about the self-awareness stuff, and I'm kind of like, I think over time I've become increasingly clear on the shit that I'm hopeless at.
Mm.
And one of the things I'm just not great at is managing people.
Yeah.
In terms of like,
yeah, right. I wouldn't have picked that.
Yeah. I think I'm quite a good leader. I would say leader. Oh,
so it's
company.
There's a difference. You're spot on. Yeah, there is a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. And my business partner George, who I've been working with, and he's like my best mate as well, and we've been working together for, you know, since we started, and he is an unbelievably good manager.
Yep.
And very good process, like operations, all that kind of stuff. And he started as kind of the designer, and I was kind of like the business guy. He was kind of the design guy, and it's kind of ended up being, you know, he's ended up being kind of, he's the CEO now of Social Garden, much better CEO for the stage the business is at than what I was. So I think to answer your question, does it get heavier? Kind of, but then you kind of just are able to afford better staff.
Yeah.
And you kind of get to know yourself better in terms of what you're good at and what you're not so good at. And like, we have like amazing leaders in the business that we kind of, that suit my leadership, that are kind of like the yin to the yang on my style and George's style and all these other things. So, you know, we have the same thing with Urban, with a guy called Craig Holmes, and he's just unbelievable. Like, at some point, he's probably going to be a better CEO of Urban than I will be. In the same way it happened with Social Garden.
Yeah, yeah, and that's interesting. But it's like you say, it's a self-awareness, isn't it? Rather than sort of going, oh, well, I'll do this and I'll do that and I've got to do it all. It's stepping back and going, who do we need in what area you know, and you're big on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I've got one. And why did we pivot? What was the talk about the pivot, your personal pivot from Social Garden into urban?
Yeah, we kind of, you know, we always talk about confronting the brutal facts and like only the paranoid survive. And we talk about these types of things all the time. And we're kind of constant. I would say futurists in the sense that we're just obsessed with new technology and what's coming and what's happening, going to happen with climate change, what's happening with crypto, all these kinds.
There's a blockchain, is that going to?
The blockchain, all this stuff. So we're like super just, I would say, hobbyists in that space, not even related to work. And so we kind of always think about what's Facebook trying to do and what's Google trying to do.
And why are they doing these things?
And, you know, when we look at Social Garden, we were paranoid that we had too much exposure to Facebook and Google, and that we knew that if they could, that like they're kind of our partner in a sense, but they would easily be happy to disintermediate us if they could, which basically means like go around us or whatever. And, you know, that was our opinion. They haven't told us that or anything like that. And maybe I'm wrong, but.
Well, that sort of happened recently. Something happened in, you know.
Didn't you say it broke or it tried to trick us? Or something?
No. More about like Facebook, because the issues they were having with the Australian government, they turned off the news, right? They stopped just showing the news. So you just, man, the pandemic in recent years just goes to show like if it can happen, it will. And like you said, if all your eggs are in the one basket.
Game over.
Wow.
Not game over.
You're sitting duck, aren't you?
Yeah. And I mean, like for us, you know, we wanted to make sure that, you know, we've got a commitment to it, the people that choose to come and work for us. Because, like, all of our staff, they're all super smart, high achieving type people. And they want to work in a place where it's kind of hard and they get challenged and all these kinds of things. And, you know, we thought, well, what happens if Facebook and Google, if something happens with Facebook and Google, whether it's them coming, like, doing something to us, or people don't use Facebook or Instagram or whatever anymore, or there's some other thing happens basically that is beyond outside of our control. And we felt like there was too many things that were kind of outside of our control. What we did have our control was our commitment to the people that chose to come and work with us. And we wanted to make sure that if something happens with that stuff, we've got a good place for them to go. And it's turned out that it hasn't happened in the way that we thought. And Social Garden, you know, we've just had the best year we've ever had. And before that, and we're having another cracker this year. But it was just kind of this paranoid idea that we kind of had too much exposure to things that we couldn't control, and we felt that sense of commitment to the people that are working with us, that we wanted to have a plan B, and we wanted to start early because everything feels like it takes.
So eight. Urban was the plan B.
It was kind of like, you know, if something happens with Facebook and Social and that it would directly impact Social Garden.
Yep.
Then like we've got Urban. And we've got all these, we're going to be in a position where we've got our own asset in terms of like a consumer facing brand.
Yep.
We've got like really fucking good people in those businesses in Social Garden. And it kind of gives us a pretty good backup plan for those people to go and move across. Oh man,
and you know what? Mm-hmm. You may not be fucking wrong either, right? Because if you think about like the metaverse, right? This is the new, the NFTs and the metaverse and all that. And obviously Facebook's changed its name to Meta because they know something. Like you said, what do they know and why are they doing what they're doing?
Yeah.
Well, because that's where it's going, right? It's hard to wrap your head around it, but that is where it's going. So maybe you were just before your time, because I feel like that metaverse is going to, that's going to trump the social platforms that we know today, right?
Because
we're going to interact in the metaverse. So it's going to be different, which is going to affect that.
I'm lost.
Hey, how are you going over there, Dan?
I'm lost.
Your brain looks like it's melting.
I heard Meta something. I just build houses. They do that in Meta, in metaverse?
Yeah, well, they do. It's called the fucking sandbox, mate. You buy plots in your sandbox.
Now, Mike, I wanted to ask you, mate, you were number one employee for 2 years or 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, like the key thing for us is, I mean, that's an award that we went for. We won it. It was awesome, you know, and so it's, but for us, you know, we talk about the idea of the performance defining component of the value chain, and that sounds like a bit of a mouthful, but if you can imagine like if you drag an industry, if you kind of break a business apart into all of its kind of sub components, you've got one part usually that really matters, and for us in Social Garden it's the people part.
Yeah.
And so what we focus on, how do we get the best people to want to come and work for us, how do we treat them like gold, create great opportunities, listen to what they're saying, give them cadence over their own and agency over their own, you know, success, and stuff like that. And so, you know, we really focus on trying to make,
love it, man.
Make it a great place.
We
love
it. We're big on culture. Yeah, we love it. And that's obviously, you've nailed it there.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're it's always an evolving thing, and, you know, different people want to have work means different things to different people. And I think trying to kind of cater and understand what people are trying
to get. Different motivations.
And
it's not always money, is it?
Like people, a lot of the time it's not.
Yeah, exactly. But the common assumption is that people, the motivation is money, but
you start to realize
that it's not.
And we've said it a few times, and we always try and tell our listeners out there, if you are running a business or starting a business.
Talking about Big E.
You've got to look after your employees. Absolutely. And you've got to look after Big E. He gets looked after. He's got a fridge full of all stuff down there. We look after him. And that's how you create the culture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bringing good people, man. And you know what, to your point, you know, we got looped in with you today through DC.
Yeah.
DC was one of our first employees, and that we poached him, man, because we just saw who he was, and we're like, you know what, dude? I don't know if this is exactly what you want to do, but come and work for us. And he's been a big part of our culture now.
Turn it 100%. Around. Get it around. There he is.
DC and I actually been homies for a while now. We play in the same touch footy team. Shout out to the Kierans, three-time champions. Yeah, boy.
Hang on. Are we going to? Gotcha.
I don't think it's like that. DC said he dominated the other night. Was that true? Or?
Mate, he's pretty sharp.
That's super interesting, all of this stuff, man, because me and Pete, and I know Dan, we're in a bit of a parallel journey, and you're definitely further advanced in that journey to us. And I guess that's we've put a lot of
so
focus
it's nice
in.
To hear those
yes,
things.
Yes, man, it's reassuring.
Even
to go,
though they're advanced, they're similar ideals baselines.
It's interesting, like why I had lunch. I sat down next to this young woman that started with us. She's like 22, is like a digital designer yesterday at lunch, and she was like, you know, what's it like? Is it so stressful running a company, kind of thing? And I was like, you know, I think it's a common misconception that it's like people think that, you know, if you've got one employee versus 100 employees, it's not 100 times harder to have 100 people, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's kind of everyone's own life experience. It kind of comes back to everyone wants different things from their experience at work. And so it's just thinking about like, how do I describe this? It kind of feels to me like the day that I was walking home and the rain, it went down, it's like that felt as bad to me, worse to me at that time than any bad thing that I've had happen to me recently. And it's all contextual. So it's like, you know, for her, if she can't find the right design and that puts her body in kind of a physical state of stress, it's the exact same feeling for her as something that would be perceived as being a bigger deal to me, but my physical response to that stressful situation is exactly the same as the physical response for her in terms of her stressful situation. And I think, you know, remaining and kind of understanding where employees are coming from, because it's like, although you've got a lot of shit going on, it's stressful for you, it's like they've got shit going on as well, and it's equally stressful for them.
Correct,
because it's what they know. It's the big things in their life. That's I think that's a good lesson to remember across the board. Hey, can we talk a little bit about property? I'm a bit biased.
Hey, we got
I know you guys like to talk about your culture and your people and stuff. But like, yeah, you're, you know, a big one for property. You know, obviously we've had you know, pandemic going on, all that sort of stuff. It was a big deal at the start of that. People were saying different things, so-called expert, property market was going to dive.
It's going. It's going to sink. We're all done.
Real estate's not a thing anymore.
Thank God it's still rolling.
But I'm moving into the spare room because we're fucked.
Yeah.
You know, because I guess, you know, for yourself, like you know, you've got a platform where people bring their property to sell. You know, did you think that was going to take a big dive?
You know, we kind of hit a crisis period, and this is kind of a process we've followed for as long as we've been in it, when it's like when there's a high degree of uncertainty, we sit down, George and I, and we say, okay, let's kind of just get everything out from our heads, so we're kind of not like telling ourselves this narrative like, oh fuck, what if this happens and this happens and this happens, where half of it's, you know, may not happen. So what we do is we write down what is the absolute worst case scenario that's going to happen, and then what is the absolute best case scenario that could happen. And then what we do is we write down all the things, so we're kind of not letting ourselves kind of negatively think about all of these extremities and stuff.
On a loop.
On a loop,
yep.
Where it just becomes unhelpful. And we write all the things down so we've got it out. We don't have to kind of be like, oh, fuck, we didn't think about this. This is other bad thing that might happen to us. And when you kind of get in this thing where you're just talking about all the bad stuff that can happen and you stop talking about the solutions to the problem that you've got. So we go down, we write down all the stuff. What's all the bad, the worst case scenario, like, you know, we lose with the real estate market explodes and we lose the company and it's like, what would we do if that happened? And kind of making a plan for each of the worst case scenarios, focusing on how do we protect against the downside? What are the things that we can do to manage parts of the risk of that stuff? And then we finish the session with what's the absolute dream case scenario here? And then what are the things that we can do to increase the probability of that scenario occurring? Mm. And so we kind of have these two plans. We know what we're going to do if the shit's the fan. So then we don't have to keep talking about it. We can just focus on execution.
Put in the top drawer. Yep.
It's not even in the drawer. It's on the table. It's on the table. And then we have the what's the best case scenario and what are all the opportunities that may come off the back of this? Mm. And we put that on sitting that. Right next to it.
Opportunities, opportunities, yeah.
Yeah. And so there's like
blood in the streets.
Yeah. And it's like we kind of, you know, we talked about all the bad things that could have occurred when we went into COVID. We talked about what are the different things. One of the things was interest rates are probably going to go down, which means there's probably going to be a property boom. Which means it's probably going to be good for us.
Well, how come you knew?
So you lost DC's number?
But how did you, like, the crazy thing is, how did you know that, right? Because I feel like...
He's a guru.
But I'm not following all the economists and stuff. Yeah. But my gut feel, the whispers that I was hearing, or the consensus or the sentiment was that it was going to be tough. It was going to be a...
Doomsday.
There was doomsdays. So... Clearly, that makes every bit of sense what you just said. The interest rates are going to go down because the powers that be are going to have to make some tweaks to adjust, and that directly is going to affect the property market positively. That makes sense.
Yeah.
How come all the economists were telling us that we'll screw? Because we drove away from our office here in Ivanhoe, and I drove home that one day when it really became real and thought there was that much uncertainty. I was like, I don't know what this is. But I feel like we're fucked. You know what I mean? Everyone's saying like, I'm not hearing the sentiment's not good. Don't know when it's going to end. Don't even know what it is. And it was pretty crazy. And it just didn't go that way. And it didn't even, I felt like I was working from home. We were all working from home. We were still making sales. People, you know, we're in property development. We're still developing property. It just went the opposite way. Any thoughts on why it went, you know what I mean?
And just to be clear, I'm not some kind of messiah being like, the property market will go up.
It's like, well, that's what you need.
Buying or selling?
That's what we need to know.
So what we did, we planned as though it was going to be the
worst. Plan for the worst, hope for the best.
Exactly. Plan for the worst, hope for the best. Look for the signals of it going well. Look for the signals it's going bad. And then just adjust the plan accordingly. The big thing for us, we were like, you know, interest rates are probably going to go down, which means the property market's probably going to go okay. But the big issue for us being in development, because we don't work in established, we only do new development, is that the borders are going to shut and it's going to create issues around immigration, which did play out. Yep. And so we kind of made a plan as though it was going to be the very worst, but we also wrote our good list and said, if shit starts going good, what are we going to do? And having a plan, and we were like, we're going to look at buying companies, we're going to try grow the team, because it means a lot of people are probably going to fire a whole bunch of people that should have made the wrong call. We kind of dropped our staff down in terms of hours and things like that, planning, because we, you know, if the worst
preparing
happens,
for the worst, yep.
Preparing for the worst. Then we started seeing, then the interest rates conversation started coming out. We're like, yeah, this is the hope. Yeah, this really is what we're hoping for. Yeah, really good. Yeah, and then it started, and so we didn't let anyone. No one lost their job, so we got to look after all the staff. Oh, cool. And they sat on, because we're like, if it goes well, what are the things that are going to matter? We don't want to let go any people because we're going to need them. So we kind of made the plan based on the fact that we planned for the downside, leave ourselves optionality on the upside, and then had a plan of what we were going to do, and that involved moving the people back to full time. I mean, looking for acquisition opportunities of distressed companies in different parts of the market that are going to go through that process. And so we kind of just, then as we just got the information, we just based our decisions based on the information that was becoming available.
Was Shouter one of them that you jumped on? Was that post pandemic or during the pandemic that you jumped on Shouter?
That was when the market was booming.
Yep.
Yeah. And we were kind of like, we
see what's going on here.
Yeah, we see what's going on. It's just one of those ones. The reason I invested in that company, the founder is just an absolute jet. His bet was an early employee that they sold a tech company, a super successful exit previously. But they kind of have this unique model where if I'm a automotive dealership or a real estate agent or something like that, effectively what happens is that I saw that the future of that business, I think, was going to be being able to plug their micro gifting system to be able to send, like, and buy you a beer or a coffee or lunch or whatever. How cool would it be if you could plug that into a marketing automation tool? So say I buy a house from you and I move in, and then a year later you want to do something, a surprise and delight kind of thing, and you could set up your CRM that it would automatically buy me lunch with a personalized message from you.
That's cool.
That's insane. That's cool. That's
or gross. Bottle of beer or bottle of wine or
all that kind of stuff. And it's like, it's just a really effective way to engage with people automatically in a meaningful offline way. And effectively, most of the, in my view, a lot of the fintechs, particularly with the Afterpay deal recently, a lot of those businesses are based on a valuation per user. So effectively, the most challenging part of building a fintech company is acquiring users at scale. And so by virtue of them being able to sell the solution to businesses, and then the business effectively giving something, means the person that's receiving the money needs to download the app on their phone.
Absolutely.
Mm. So you get this B2B to C, at massive scale, very low cost, because the user doesn't, you don't have to advertise to the end user. They have to organic. Get the money. It's basically this organic growth strategy. Yeah. And then I think, the way that plays out is I've got just a massive, able to acquire fintech customers at scale, very fast.
In an organic manner.
In an organic manner that doesn't cost any money.
Yeah. Wow.
And so that's kind of why. And then we're fortunate, one of the people that's been great to us is a guy, Steve Kloss, who's on the board at Car Sales, was part of the founding team, and he's kind of coached us for maybe 5 years or so. And I called him and I was like, hey man, I've seen this kind of fintech play. I kind of think it's a good one, because I think with the real estate stuff, I also think for the automotive space it'll be good. And he's the CEO of a company called Pentana, which have 60% of all of the CRMs of all of the car dealerships in Australia. And I was like, if he thinks it's a good idea and that he thinks the dealerships would do it, I'm like, and he wants to invest with me, I'm like, oh man. And he was like, yeah man, we're on. Nice. Yeah.
So you still invest in other companies?
Yeah, yeah.
So what about a building company?
He's got the Midas touch. I know, I see what's going on here. He's got the Midas touch. Development company? Both sides of the market?
I reckon you got this, man. You don't need investors. That's the other thing. We kind of never raise money. And in most cases, I think a lot of companies that are raising huge amounts of money and focusing all of their effort on raising money is the wrong thing to focus on.
Yeah, it's a rod for their back, for sure.
It's a rod for their back. And we're kind of fortunate that we sold a small amount of equity to some really great people. One was the former group COO from REA, who's been, as you can imagine, quite helpful. Another dude, David Trewern, who's been a close mentor and friend. And he had Flightboard, which is have you guys seen that on? It's kind of a foiling system. So it's like a surfboard almost with a foil, and it's got an electric motor.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, they're cool.
He's the founder of that.
Yeah.
And before that, he had a 400 or 500 person kind of digital agency vibe. So we sold small amount. Rather than raising money, we went down the service path first. And I think that's the other thing that I would, if people are looking at kind of I want to get into tech, my recommendation would definitely be find a way that you can provide the core value of what the technology you want to build. Is there a way that you can deliver the core value that the technology provides without using technology, and don't raise the money, sell it as a service, focus on getting the service adopted, work out what the problems are with the market, and then as you kind of understand the things that that are successful when you run it manually, then you can kind of go, okay, cool, we know this works, this shit doesn't work. And if you'd built the technology from the start, you would have built a whole bunch of technology that would be redundant, and then you'd have to raise money to build the technology. Right. So you start with you kind of do the things that are manual on this, and that the technology will eventually automate, knowing that it doesn't really matter so much about the margins and things in the short term. It's just kind of breaking even, getting the customer base rolling, getting engagement, getting feedback on what people care about. Mm. And then as you get more certainty over time, converting this manual process into a technology solution, and that's where the margins come.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's really good.
Yeah,
heavy, isn't it? PK, that's awesome.
I've got one question. I want to ask one more question.
You've got one more.
Yeah, is that all we got?
No, you're right.
Mate, obviously, big entrepreneur. I want to know what your biggest challenge was in all of your businesses and how you overcame that. You might have already answered that.
I think the biggest challenge, I think it's kind of just the mindset stuff of staying balanced and trying to stay, not get, because I'm kind of like an excitable person by nature. Yeah, I really enjoy the process and the wins and like, you know, and just finding a way to remain not too frothy when the going's good and not too gutted when the going's bad, and just kind of trusting the process a little bit. Nice. And that's kind of something that it was difficult at the start and it's difficult now.
Still difficult.
Still difficult.
Yeah, okay. Nice.
Yeah. But I think for the big thing that I've learned as well through the process is that you get a lot of value from the, because a lot of people go into business because they want to make money and they want to like define their own future and all that stuff, and it's like all of that stuff's great, but it's actually not the thing that you kind of get the real happiness from. And so we do a lot of work with a group called Igniting Change. Okay. We donated 1% of the equity of Social Garden, 1% of the equity of Urban, 1% of all of the time in Social Garden every year goes, we donate to not-for-profits.
Wow.
And we do it through this group called Igniting Change, which is led by the most unbelievable woman you have ever met in your life.
Royalty.
Her name's Jane Tucson. Yep. And she's just like amazing. She actually was the co-founder of Comic Relief in the UK, which is like one of the most successful charities
Before its time, like blazed the trail, didn't they?
Yeah, and so I've learned.
And Red Nose.
Red Nose Day. Yep. It's all from her and a co-founder. And I think I've learned so much about what it means to be happy and what it means to kind of give back and the joy that. And it's kind of almost a selfish pursuit in some ways, where it's like, it's great to give someone a leg up, but man, it feels good as well.
Yeah.
It's nearly selfish. It's nearly selfish, but you kind of,
and I think like, that's the other thing we, you know, one of the lessons we learned was like, it's so easy when the highs are high and the lows are low to kind of get so caught up in that moment. And then if you can just have something that you do that's not about yourself.
A greater purpose
where you're like, I'm kind of doing it for me and I'm doing it for the staff and I'm doing it for my business partners and I'm doing it for my family, but I'm also doing it for people that I don't know that kind of deserve a break. Mm. And I think kind of finding a way in the early stages of the business to integrate the kind of profit for a purpose piece has really kind of helped us to remain balanced and focused in those kind of inevitable ups and downs, because it kind of, you're like, well, if we fucking lose it all, we've at least done all this good shit.
I love that. I love that. Did you have something?
Yeah, I just had one more property question.
You get one more now.
I did, because sort of just follow up what I was saying before. Do you have any insights on where you think it's going? I know you've mentioned you were early into the Bitcoin and stuff like that, and we spoke about Facebook changing to the metaverse. What are you guys talking about behind closed doors? No one's listening. Yeah. It's all good. But yeah, what are you anticipating, or are you seeing a shift or any trends or anything?
Yeah. I mean, like, I've got quite strong views, and whether they're right or wrong, I kind of think, we obviously think and talk about this stuff like a lot. I think the discrepancy between the apartment market and the land market is obviously, it's never been so high. And I think apartments are due for a good run. And I know that's kind of and if you'd asked me 2 years ago, I would have been like, that would not be my perspective. Yep. It's great to buy an apartment because you want to live in and around the lifestyle. And that's why people buy apartments a lot of the time, or the investors are looking for yield, not so much capital growth. But I think we're coming up to a period where my kind of guess for next year is I think apartments may outstrip houses for the first time in terms of capital growth for a super long time. But well-built apartments as well, because there's a lot of shit apartments, and that's kind of one of the reasons we started Urban, because we would hear on the calls, because we also have our Social Garden business, we generate leads, then we call the customer on behalf of our client and talk to them. And so what we found is there was a lot of uncertainty around the quality of development. I think that is a real issue, and it really matters who you're buying from. But I think if those kind of, particularly the old like 1970s stuff that's really well-built, that's kind of unrenovated, things like, I think there's a big opportunity in and around that space. I know with looking at our data, the townhouse market is absolutely popping off the charts.
Yeah.
we ran this super complicated data science project across.
That's all we want to do. Let's go.
That's already on the side now. Bahamas PKs, that sounds good.
here's one for you. So we ran this kind of data science with this like data science. We're like, yeah, we're gonna kind of find out all this analysis because we've sent millions of emails through our kind of urban business and a lot of it's kind of automation and stuff. And we were like, you know, what's the words that we can say in the email that'll have the highest predictor of whether the lead becomes a lead? And we were like guessing of like, is it going to be like, is it about the price? Is it about the location? Is it about how, you know, what could it be? And do you know what it was? And it was three times higher, is that if the word townhouse was included in the email, wow, the user was three times more likely to click.
Oh, wow.
Wow, eh?
Relative to apartments.
Yeah, that's mine. Yeah,
look,
that's
awesome. Look at the lips. Hey. Look at their lips over there. They're just licking it up.
Put the drill back in. That's all right.
But, okay, but yeah, so my view is that, yeah, I think, you know, the land prices can't continue to go up. There's probably going to be a change in interest rates towards the end of next year. Mm-hmm. I think what we're going to see is election mid-year, immigration open shortly after that, interest rates change after that. The kind of price growth in land is going to slow. The kind of apartment prices are going to catch up a little bit. Mm. Not like they're not going to be like overtaken by any stretch, but I think the current discrepancy between apartments and land is going to get bridged.
Yep.
And then I think we're going to see a massive period of migration of changing from low density middle ring converting into medium density.
Yep.
And I think it's going to be driven by the townhouse market, and then it's going to go up, I reckon, on the inner ring.
And driven by certain businesses.
Built by others.
Built by, yeah. Built, well, yeah.
And advertised by others. Yeah.
Shout out Nana May.
Talking about quality. Yeah, quality.
We're all together. Yeah, it's all three of us.
What about one more? I know I said one more, but I'm really interested, man. Blockers, because you clearly know a thing or two about blockchain. Do you, look, and this is a deep conversation, so just on a surface level, do you see blockchain coming in and disrupting the property market in any kind of way?
I don't think it's going to just, I mean, like groups like Pexar and others, I think company, like in terms of optimizing the transaction from a user experience standpoint is totally going
to. So maybe peer-to-peer instead of having the intermediaries?
To be honest, I reckon REA is not going anywhere. I think the network effects they've got in the established market, there's a reason we're not going after established. It's not because we like, don't like established. It's because we think the opportunities are new. And do I think the blockchain is going to be as big a change as similar to the change with the internet, yeah, I would suggest. And I think where it's going to be, it's going to be in the property market. It's actually going to be more in the finance side. And I reckon decentralized finance or like DeFi is going to become mainstream over the next 10
through 15. The smart contracts, lending the money.
Yeah, 10 to 15
years. So that's peer-to-peer. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so
I reckon the banks have got a good strategy in the sense that they're kind of, you know, my view is the banks probably should have tried to buy Aria 15 years ago, if they could have. I think that would have been a good play because I think realestate.com.au is a material risk to the big four. And I reckon that
was even there getting into lending.
Targeting into lending
for a little bit,
mate. They are such a well-run company.
Everything.
Like that, honestly, they are a beast. And I reckon they're going to be big. And I reckon, so it's REA in Australia is a risk for the big four. And then I think, the decentralized finance is next. But I mean, fuck, what do I know as well? Like, that's just my guess.
I reckon the same thing.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Sounding all right. Now, Mike, this has been awesome. Usually, you know, we ask, like, you know, you're doing work for charity, that sort of stuff. We've touched on it. Is there anything you just wanted to back over? You know, you want people to get around?
Any links you want us to drop in the description?
Yeah. Actually, it would be awesome if you are kind of going into business, one thing to think about is the 1% pledge. As I said before, it's like what the toughest challenges are. Mm. It's like the kind of balancing the highs and the lows.
So that's something we can do as a business. I mean, Pete can.
You guys can do it. It's called the 1% pledge. They're kind of making it increasingly easy to do it because no one wants to deal with like more paperwork and headaches, and you retain all the kind of control and everything. And Igniting Change is actually helping organizations to do that.
So that's the onboarding. They help you onboard.
Onboarding.
Set that up. Yep.
Herbert Smith Freehills, which is one of the big law firms, have developed a whole bunch of the contracts and things related to it to protect the founder, but to make it really easy and low cost to do it. that's now happening. So if you get in touch, I'm sure we'll be able to point you in the right direction with that. The other one is we've launched a notebook on for igniting change. It's got a whole bunch of stories from different community organizations. Some of them are kind of Indigenous education with a group called Children's Ground, the Asylum Seeker Resource Center with the ASRC, and a whole bunch of different kind of emerging community organizations. It's not a profit exercise. It's obviously the sales are going to a not-for-profit and all the money goes out. But what the book has, which is, I think it's actually a really good tool for employee engagement. And the reason is because the talent war is super real out there. Employees want to feel like they're doing it for a reason other than to make the owner a whole bunch of money. Mm-hmm. And so what the book does, it's called Take Note, and there's a QR code that's inside the notebook. You take your phone out, you scan the code, and then it gives you a story from the founder of the not-for-profit organization talking about what change they're trying to make in the world and how you can kind of get around
it. Yeah, that's awesome.
Cool. And the notebooks are $10 each, and it's just a good cool thing to do that supports not-for-profits, supports a good message.
No, I love that, guys. Now, are you guys done with your questions?
Yeah,
we're done.
We're good. You're good?
Yeah, good.
Beautiful, guys. Mike, that's been awesome, man. Like, really, really, really good.
Amazing.
That's it, guys. Thanks again. Please like, share, subscribe, all that sort of stuff. Anyone who's going to get value out of this, and a lot of value just happened right now. So, please like, share, subscribe. That's it, guys. See you at the top.
You. Awesome. Sorry about Benny calling you Mick.
I don't call you Mick again.
Oh, Mike. That was awesome. That was fun.
Well, you know why? Because my dad's Mick.
Yeah, right.
So I've got to.
I was really going to pull you up on the arm.